Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, October 3rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 90 minutes or so to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we push through the middle of the week here on Bang the Book Radio. Two guests will join me here today. The first, Brian Leonard, professional handicapper from WagerTalk.com. We're chat six games here on today's show, two in the NFL, four in college football. We'll get Brian's thoughts on handicapping conference play and also a big injury in the Mountain West Conference. Next up, we'll have Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. We're going to chat NFL, golf, and then a little bit of NHL as the season begins here tonight. We'll chat with him about some NHL derivative strategies that he has and also some general betting tips for that, as well as the Safeway Open as the PGA Tour 2018-2019 season begins at Silverado Country Club in Napa on Thursday. Then finally, I'll wrap the show up as promised on Twitter with a look at the Major League Baseball playoffs, specifically looking at hedging those futures bets that we made over the summer based on my recommendations from the bettors box. So the Indians, a team I told you to take over and over and over again, well, now we have to decide what we want to do with that Indians futures price. So I'll talk about that as well as some general MLB playoff betting tips. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Very happy to say that Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks are back. We've got four games here tonight. He's got one opinion of those four games. Gave you a great write-up of injury updates, his lines compared to the market lines. Really, really good piece. You want to make sure that you check that out every day over at bangthebook.com. I also updated my MLB picks and tips piece with a look at tonight's AL wildcard game between Oakland and New York. We've got updated college football power ratings. We'll have updated NFL power ratings. David LeFerrier's NBA preseason betting system now 9-2 here on the season. So a very good start for that. So you want to make sure that you're checking that out as well. Just, we've got tons and tons of great content over there at the website. Get involved in those free pick contests where you can win some cash prizes. Also, make sure that you check out our sportsbook reviews, including our review for DSI Sportsbook, where you can use that promo code BANG100, get that 100% deposit bonus, and see how things go for you over there. Two guests joining me on the program here today. The first one, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
This is an exciting day. You mentioned Parker Michaels with the hockey, and hockey season starts today, and as we saw last night in the Major League Baseball playoffs, there's nothing better from an excitement standpoint, for at least for myself, to watch playoff baseball, the moves that the managers are making, the moves that we can disagree with all off season. But it's a fun time to be a sports bettor and a sports handicapper.
Yeah, it really is. Lots and lots of different markets going on. And, you know, not just the NHL starting up here tonight, and obviously the NHL really gets started for you tomorrow with the Golden Knights home opener. But you've also got the NBA just a couple of weeks away as well. So very, very busy times, to say the least, right now. And, Brian, let's start with a couple of markets that we've been talking about quite a bit here over the last several weeks, the NFL and college football. And in the NFL, I want to touch on a couple of games with you that we can get through here and then spend a little bit more time on college football. But game 453-454 is a very interesting one to me here this weekend, Jacksonville and Kansas City. The markets have been against Kansas City the last couple of weeks. They covered against the 49ers, didn't cover that game there against the Denver Broncos this past week. I'm not really sure what to do with Kansas City at this point because we know their defense is bad. We know their offense is good. But it does seem like over the last 2 weeks here, the opposition has started to make adjustments.
Yeah, they had. And that Kansas City line actually dropped down. It was open, I believe, 5 and then went down to 3.5. So if you played them late, you were a winner on Kansas City again, which would have made you 4-0 against the spread. Because then we all saw it coming as they were down by 3, down by 10, down by 3, and then the touchdown makes it 4. So if you were a late Denver player in that game, you kind of saw that one coming. But, yeah, the thing you can take away from the Chiefs is that's really the first time they played a good defensive team. And Denver, for the most part, controlled the entire game. It's just that in the last quarter, Kansas City had some tremendous quarterback play, as they've had all season long, and were able to win that. So I think we saw more of what we need to see going forward out of Kansas City on Monday night for the rest of the season. Now they're playing Jacksonville, a team that's been tremendous defensively. But keep in mind, one of the stats I like to use is offensive and defensive play success rate. And Jacksonville has only allowed 37% of opponent plays to be successful, which is tremendous. But go back and look at the offenses Jacksonville has played. They played the Giants, New England, who, say what you want, have struggled offensively this year, Tennessee, and the Jets. So even though the numbers are outstanding, this is by far the best offense that they have faced this season. That's going to be a concern for Jacksonville. Kansas City right now currently between 3 and 3.5, but when you take a look at home field advantage in the NFL, I would think Kansas City's probably at the top. I'm not big on home field advantage. I think normally people, you know, the 3 is too much. If you're using 3 for a league-wide, it's probably 2.25 or closer to 2. But Kansas City's legit. Kansas City's probably a 4-point home field advantage, and right now you're saying that Jacksonville's probably a half a point better when you're looking at them on a neutral. Not sure if I agree with that, just based on the teams that Jacksonville has played. If you go into the season, Kansas City, the Chargers, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, and Denver, a lot of people would tell you all 4 of those teams would make the playoffs, or at least have a very good chance to make the playoffs. Unfortunately, San Francisco, with the quarterback injury, is probably not going to do that. And, hell, being a Cleveland Browns fan, I hope Pittsburgh continues the downfall that they've had and they don't make it. But still, Kansas City's played some legitimate teams. And at this point, as long as there's still 3s out there right now, 320s, I think that's a little bit of a bargain. It's probably not enough to make me play this game myself. But it's a situation where Kansas City's obviously on their short week. But Jacksonville hasn't played an offense like this. This is going to be an interesting game.
And that's what I love about this game, is that there is so much to unpack. There are a lot of complexities to this one. You mentioned Kansas City on the short week off of a division road win, which is, you know, not an easy thing to really get here in the NFL. We also talk about, you know, a lot of people will kind of say the number doesn't matter until it does. Well, it mattered in that Denver and Kansas City game, which is why, even though a lot of times the game won't fall around the number, you still want to get the best of the number for those times when it does actually happen. And that was certainly a perfect indication of that. That line was 4.5, 5, I think even 5.5 earlier on in the week, closes 3.5. You know, obviously you want to make sure that you got the best of the number there, no matter what side you were playing in that game. Then you mentioned here, you know, Kansas City, at a minimum, I would say, does get the full 3 in terms of home field advantage respect in the NFL. You say maybe it's 4. I say it's probably in the 3.5 type of range. But again, we talk about looking for context clues in the betting market. Right now, as you said, Jacksonville, a favorite on a neutral. I think that's a tough sell for a lot of people out there. But at the same time, maybe the books are making a statement here. Maybe the books are saying, you know, we don't think Kansas City is as good as they've looked here so far. Maybe Jacksonville is a bit better, especially once they get tested by somebody. So, again, you don't necessarily have to play this game because it's one of the marquee games of the weekend, but this is one of those, not even handicapping 101, but handicapping 201 types of lines in the NFL.
Yeah, it definitely is, and I wouldn't argue with the 3.5 on the Chiefs. 3.5 to 4 is probably the right range, but one thing I do want to point out is I always like to track how teams do covering the spread when they lose a turnover battle. And Jacksonville's actually 2-1 on the season. They haven't won a turnover battle since they played the Giants in Week 1. So that's a team, you know, those are the type of teams that I'm looking to bet on. Those are teams that I think are a little bit underrated. But keep in mind, Jacksonville's last 3 games have all been at home, and their only road game was at the New York Giants. So a big difference for playing at home against the Jets and Tennessee, teams that don't have any offense, and then going on the road to Kansas City and playing a team that's probably playing better offense than anybody in the league, except for maybe the LA Rams, who have been just phenomenal so far this season.
All right, so let's take a look here at another game further down the board, and this one also a little bit of a marquee matchup here. Minnesota and Philadelphia, game 471-472, as they make a big jump down the board, because this is a 425 Eastern kickoff in Philadelphia. So we've got actually four 4 o'clock games here this week. I think we only had three last week, or maybe three each of the last 2 weeks. So we do get a late kickoff here. This is another one where the books are digging in on three. This game, much like Jacksonville, Kansas City, and then also Atlanta versus Pittsburgh, the books are doing everything they possibly can to hold on to the three in this one. We see Philadelphia 3-25, 3-30 out there at some places. However, we also see a 3-20 at a place like MyBookie, which would suggest that maybe at that shop, Minnesota, a little bit of a public side there, kind of keeping this line down some. So lots to unpack about this game too, Brian.
Yeah, as I look at the sports books right now, I see William Hill, which is a public book in Vegas, they're at 3-120, so that's probably a good observation there. When the season started, I was convinced the Minnesota Twins were the best – excuse me, Minnesota Twins. Minnesota Vikings were the best team in the NFL. I love the signing of quarterback. I expected the defense to come back and everything they had. I thought they were just plain old loaded. Well, it hasn't been that way for the Minnesota Vikings on the season. 1-2-1 so far on their records. And when you take a look at that defense, and I talked a little bit about breaking teams down by percent of successful plays, Minnesota Vikings defense is allowing 49-point plays. That's about half of the time that on defense, they allow the opposition to do what they need to do on that play. That is really, really unimpressive. They've lost a turnover battle 3 straight weeks. The sack battle last week to the Rams, they lose 4-1. To Green Bay, they lose 4-2. They just have not played very well at the line of scrimmage. Of course, a lot of it is injuries. Minnesota has been banged up with injuries along the offensive line and defensively. They haven't been nearly the team that they've been in the past. But I bet Philadelphia off the opener. The opener was 3-105, I believe. And I took the Eagles at that point. I just thought the Eagles right now, at least by far, in my opinion, the better defense here. And the offense is getting better each and every week. The more the quarterback is back in action, Carson Wentz, he's looking better. So that's what I took a look at. So if you can get 3-110 or better, which I don't know if it'll see it again, but that was what I was looking at for Philadelphia. Losing that game last week, and you know, the car coming off of an overtime game, so that's just extra time that you know, they had to pull it up, be on the field last week. But coming off the loss, I think, makes them more focused on this game, especially when you consider the team they need to beat. One of the teams they need to beat is Minnesota, and last year that was a major situation with them in Minnesota. So I like Philadelphia at the -3 point or better, but the Minnesota, that defense just has not done well. And you know, they played Green Bay with a banged-up quarterback at the time. They played Buffalo with no quarterback, at least in my regard. And the Rams in San Francisco, basically, San Francisco had a -3 turnover disadvantage in that game, and they only lost on the road by 8. So if they don't turn the ball over, Minnesota really could be in a bad situation right now. So the Vikings are a bit overrated in my account.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of the case with Minnesota here as well. The thing is, I don't know exactly what Philadelphia is just yet. All of their games decided by 6 points or less, 2 on the plus side, 2 on the minus side. Losing that game to Tennessee last week on that last-second touchdown, you know, a tough situation for the Eagles. But like you said, I think it kind of creates a little bit of a bounce-back type of scenario. Now, of course, one of the things that we've been preaching about here on the shows when we break down the NFL is that Philadelphia plays the short week Thursday night game against the New York Giants on October 11th, 1 week from tomorrow. So they do have that quick turnaround after this Vikings game. Brian mentioned there, you know, with the expectations for both of these teams coming into the season, you would expect the Vikings and the Eagles to be there in the playoff hunt. So they're not overlooking this game one bit to look ahead to that short week game against the Giants. So I think for me, I hope Philadelphia plays really well. Maybe I'll look to fade them on that short week against the Giants. But I think for me, Brian, as tough as it is to back Minnesota right now, you know, Philadelphia doesn't look like the same team that they were last year. They're still getting Carson Wentz in the mix. Defensively, they've played okay. I don't think they've played great. I do think they've played better than the Vikings, as you mentioned. But that's the thing for me is, you know, as this number climbs, and, there's a good chance we do end up seeing 3.5 here, it's tough to lay that price with Philadelphia, considering some of the teams that they've struggled with thus far.
Yeah, Philadelphia is obviously a team that was living off their past successes. If you take a look at what they've done thus far, when a team doesn't win the Super Bowl for a long time and then they come out and they do it, you saw the celebrations that Philadelphia had. The entire city was just in love with that team last year. And of course, if you're a player on that team, as you go through the offseason, everybody's patting you on the back, telling you how great you are. And, you know, I think Philadelphia's had a little bit of setback because of that. Obviously, they've read the press clippings a little bit and haven't played as well. And you did talk about that game coming up against the New York Giants. And that's one of the things I like is none of the players in the NFL like to play these Thursday games. But I think there's a distinct advantage if you play the home teams in these Thursday's games when they're playing a team that's not a division rival. The reason why I say that is when you have less time to prepare and the road team is traveling, it takes time to travel. If you don't know as much about the team, you're at a distinct disadvantage. When you play a team twice in a season, you know all about them. So normally, like, for example, with Indy and New England this week, even though they seem to play every single season, even though they're not divisional rivals, it's an advantage for the home team. Now, in this one, when they are playing next week, they play that team twice every season for forever. So they know each other very well. So it's not as if you're going off a scratch and have to scout this team. So the home field is not worth nearly as much when you're playing a divisional rival on this short week.
All right, let's transition over to the college football side of things. I think it's actually a really good segue because I want to talk about handicapping college football when it comes to conference play. You know, these division opponents that you play them every year. Cross-division opponents you may play every other year. Sometimes you do get them scheduled back-to-back or three straight years. And, of course, as we talked about with Ralph Michaels yesterday, in the case of Georgia Tech and Louisville, same conference, have never played each other. So you will run into some of those situations. Not the case here with the first game that we're going to talk about. But overall, Brian, when it comes to conference play, do you handicap those games differently than you've been handicapping this non-conference portion?
Yes, I do. And one thing is I've got the stats for the entire season, but I also individually take a look at how the stats do in conference because for the most part, every conference is going to be a lot tighter than it would be in the non-conference games. The worst team in the SEC is still a pretty good team compared to everybody else. You know, you could see the lesser teams in the SEC possibly winning. You could see the lesser teams in the MAC. We've seen that already where some of the lesser teams has beaten some of the teams that that were expected to do really well. So once you get into conference action, for the most part, unless it's Rutgers, Ohio State, that kind of thing, which you're going to find in many of the conferences, they're a lot closer in retrospective power ratings because of the recruiting and because of everything that they do in each conference. So you want to take a look at that. You want to take a look at full season, but you also want to take a look at, you know, the smaller sample size of the conference rankings because, number one, when you get teams from the SEC playing some FCS team and you've got teams from the MAC playing the Big Ten, I mean, it's totally opposite. There's one team in that game has the motivation to play well, and that's usually the smaller team that gets that big chance to tell their grandchildren, hey, I played at Alabama. I played it at the Horseshoe or whatever. So it's more important for those teams. But like we discussed in the past, sometimes the coaches just want to get out of that game healthy, and they're not looking to get their players hurt if they got the lesser of the two teams from a talent standpoint. So it's a lot more variance when you're taking a look at the non-conference plays as opposed to conference football action. And that's something you always got to be aware of.
Yeah, and you know, you also get these rivalry games, and those create a lot of different handicapping situations as well because – you know, that's a game that both teams want to win, especially if you've got a one-sided type of affair where you've got maybe it's not a little brother, big brother complex when you talk about teams in the same conference or teams in the same division, but still, that's a game that really does matter to both sides of the equation. That's the first game that we're going to start with here between Eastern Michigan and Western Michigan. The directional Michigan rivalries are very, very hotly contested. These two teams have played every year since 1978. Western Michigan has won four straight and seven of the last 10. Now, of course, the four straight that they won, three of them under P.J. Fleck. Last year, they won by a field goal with Tim Lester. So the margin of victory here for Western Michigan, 44 points in 2014, 30 points in 2015, 14 points in 2016, 3 points in 2017. So Eastern Michigan has closed this gap, and Chris Creighton has been a very good recruiter there in Ypsilanti. He's been a guy that I know sharp guys do like to back a little bit. So what do you think here about this game, Brian? Game 343, 344, Western Michigan now up to a 4.5-point favorite.
Yeah, the line move makes a lot of sense to me. When you take a look at Eastern Michigan's schedule, this will be their fourth road game in 5 weeks. The last 2 weeks, they've played four overtimes. The first overtime is when they had to fly all the way to San Diego State in the third game of a three-game road trip. And that really, even though they lost that game, that really was an impressive game for Eastern Michigan. Losing that game 23-20. I had San Diego State in that game. It was clearly the wrong side. But then last week, Northern Illinois, they lose that game in triple overtime, 26-23. So they're a really tired team right now. You just have to expect Eastern Michigan to really put up a clunker this week against Western Michigan. The one thing that has hurt Eastern Michigan so far more than anything is the play at the line of scrimmage. I like to take a look at sack totals on the season. They have five sacks and they've allowed 16. So they've been dominated on the line of scrimmage. Now, granted, they played Buffalo, which is a really strong team from the MAC. They played San Diego State, which is known for their strong line play. And then they played at Purdue in Northern Illinois, but still, 16-5 is something that concerns me about Eastern Michigan. Western Michigan just played those two road games, victories at Georgia State, and pulled that one out. Another Miami Ohio loss in a close final, which is getting to be a joke anymore that Miami cannot find a way to win those games. They're going to have to change their name to the Miami Browns pretty soon. But to me, Western is the better team at this point, and the schedule situation is clear for Western Michigan. And Western has played Syracuse. We've seen Syracuse. They could have easily beat Clemson the other day. They played at Michigan and Georgia State and Miami, Ohio. And they're really, when you take a look at their numbers, they haven't played actually bad at all. They're doing a little bit better in early down success rate than the opponents. Successful play rate, they're at 40.7, allowing 45.7. So they played pretty well. So they played, at least to me, slightly better than Eastern Michigan has. And the schedule here is the real drawback. I don't know if it's you're worth to play it now at 4.5 when it was a cheaper number earlier, but that would be the only side I would look at. And it would be based on that schedule because I can't see how Eastern Michigan could come out with a full effort with all that. And keep in mind, the schedule maker has Eastern Michigan getting their only bye of the season all the way November 17th, right before they play Kent State the following week. So I don't know if they need a bye to play Kent State, but it turns out to work that way. So this is a team right now, as much as I like this Eastern Michigan team, they got Western Michigan this week, Toledo next week, and approved Ball State, and then Army comes to town. They're in a tough schedule, and this is a team right now, based on that schedule, I'm going to probably be looking to fade this team the next month.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, that, you know, we talk about circling spots that are on the calendar coming up, definitely circling that spot against Toledo next week, where Toledo could come out early, blow the doors off of them early on in this game. And Eastern Michigan is not a play catch up kind of team. They're a run the football, control the clock kind of team. As Brian mentioned, a lot of negative plays for them in the passing department with their sack differential. So if they have to come from behind, they're not the right kind of team to do it. So if Toledo starts fast next week, that's a game that could really get away. And then playing Army on October 27th, I mean, not only are you breaking up conference play a little bit, which is always a weird situation for teams, you're playing an option team. Well, you're probably going to be on the field for 40-plus minutes of that game defensively. Eastern's in two really bad spots with their next two home games on October 13th and October 27th. Brian, let's talk a little bit about Western Michigan, though, because Western Michigan, you know, they were a team, I think you and I both liked them in their opener against Syracuse. I know I played them. I had that line much lower than the market did, and they just got blitzed by the tempo early on in that game. Then they play Michigan, didn't play well. I thought that line was a little bit inflated too, but wound up staying away from it. Then they play Delaware State, a little bit of a get-right game. The last 2 weeks here against Georgia State and Miami of Ohio, they've been steamed significantly. They got bet up over a touchdown favorite at Georgia State. They got bet from a small dog to a clear favorite in that Miami of Ohio game. This week, we're seeing another move on them. So while the Eastern Michigan schedule does play into the equation here a little bit in this spot, it also appears like Western Michigan is a team that sharp guys want to buy right now.
Well, they definitely wanted to buy on last week against Miami of Ohio, as you mentioned, +2 to -3. I was able to take advantage of the pick'em line, actually, in the Golden Nugget contest. So I'm probably the only one that played that game later in the week and had some success on it. But, yeah, you're right. This is a team in Western that people are starting to believe in. And, you know, I talked about the Eastern Michigan woes regarding to the line play. Western Michigan, despite playing Syracuse, Michigan, Georgia State, and Miami, they've got a 9-4 sack advantage. So going into this game against Eastern Michigan, I think that's the major point of emphasis here is the play on the Lions and Eastern Michigan having problems. As you mentioned, they're not a great passing team in the first place, and now they've got to, as a tired team, try to fight off this team in Western Michigan that's doing a really nice job on the sacks. In fact, that Syracuse and Michigan, they actually had a 4-3 advantage in those two games. And if you'd have told me that coming into the season, I'd have thought they were covering both those games, and they ended up not covering either of those games. And yeah, I was with you on the Syracuse. I made that line 1.5. I got all the way bet down to 5, took a lot of late money, and still they were never in that game, even though the final score only shows 13. They were completely dominated in that contest.
One last point here about Western Michigan, and this is why it's important to always do box score study. I do it to update my power ratings, but it's also important for looking to possibly get ahead of line moves. Western Michigan didn't win that closing number last week against Miami of Ohio, won that game 40-39, but they had 562 yards to Miami of Ohio's 349. When you get a misleading box score like that, you oftentimes see a line move the next week on that team, and that's what we're seeing here again this week with Western Michigan. So, Brian, we'll move down the board one spot here, game 345-346, Buffalo and Central Michigan. This one up a little bit from 6.5 to 7.5 or 8. So he did go through the key number of 7 here with Buffalo, a road favorite. These two teams have not played since 2015, have only played twice since 2009, only once with the two current head coaches, John Bonamigo and Lance Leipold. I got to say, Brian, while I understand this line move, and I do think Buffalo, probably the second, maybe third best team in the MAC right now with Toledo and Ohio right there, covering a big number against this Central Michigan defense is no easy task.
No, it's not. The Central Michigan defense has looked good, but that Central Michigan offense has been horrendous. Now, granted, they've played very good teams thus far. Kentucky, Northern Illinois has got a good defense. Michigan State last week completely shut them down. And if you would have told me that Central Michigan was going to have a success rate on offense of 12.8%, and lose a turnover battle, there's no way they win that, cover that game against Michigan State. But yet, they did, 31-20. Never really in contention of losing that, as Central scored late. In fact, Central played Michigan State very well, but I think that tells, at least it told me more about Michigan State than Central. But yeah, that defense has held its own. It's done very well all season. On the season, despite playing Kentucky, Kansas, Northern Illinois, and Michigan State, they're allowing opponents only 39.9% successful plays. Great defense out of the Central Michigan team. And you take a look at that Buffalo team last week. Obviously, going into playing Army, you know, the line was bet from 5 to 7. A lot of people I know were liking Buffalo in that game. And as the game went on and on, Army just turned out to be the better team. And Army is a team right now that is still, I believe, still has value. People don't think a whole lot about the service academies, especially from this perspective of Army. It's always been Navy. It's always been Air Force. And now Army has really played well. When they played Oklahoma, that wasn't a fluke. They played well. When that offense was on the field, they were very good. Now, defensively, they don't have as much talent, and Oklahoma had a lot of success in the short time that they had the ball. But Army's a team going forward that I think you can get some advantages on. Now, Buffalo in that game fell behind and then just got worse and worse as the game went on. But keep in mind, that was in the middle of conference season. They had just played Rutgers, had a satisfying win, and then they play Army. Now they're back into conference action. They win Eastern Michigan to start the conference season 35-28. So this is a team looking to win the MAC conference, Central Michigan, Akron, Toledo, the next 3 weeks, and then Miami 10 days later. So they're more concerned, I believe, with conference action. And once that game got out of the way, they said, okay, well, this is not our day. Let's bring in some of the younger kids, give them a chance. But Buffalo's the better team, but it's going to be hard to put a lot of points on the board against the Central Michigan team. I currently have the line basically where it is. I've got two sets of power ratings. One is at 8 and one is at 5.5. So it's not going to be a game that I'm interested in. But keep in mind, Central Michigan, when you take a look at the FBS teams they've played, according to my numbers, they played a 10-point better schedule. So they've been more tested playing these better teams. And you're also getting them as a home dog with that defense. Some reasons to play Central Michigan here, although I'll probably sit out this one.
And this is a number that actually ticked all the way up to 9 at Pinnacle, which is probably the sharpest of the offshore markets, either them or Matchbook. And then it came back down into the 7.5 range. So, one of those things where also, too, the total's gone up from 47 to 50. If the total's going up, that would imply that Buffalo going to have some success on this Central Michigan defense when you consider that the line is also going up. So if you disagree with that, then you can kind of maybe, get a little bit of value on that Central Michigan side. We'll step away from the Mid-American Conference here, move down the board to game 365-366. That's Fresno State and Nevada out in the Mountain West. And, Brian, the reason I want to talk about this game is because a lot of people kind of, I don't want to say grasp at straws, but they do look for some different things that they can try to use to their advantage, maybe looking at common opponents as one of them. Toledo just played Nevada and Fresno State, beat Nevada at home 63-44, lost on the road to Fresno 49-27. So some people may kind of use the Toledo game as a barometer for both Fresno State and Nevada. Would you ever recommend something like that?
Not really. Keep in mind that Nevada had to travel all the way to Toledo and play in the Glass Bowl, which is a tough place to play. That's a long trip. Nevada really goes east that way. And then you had, obviously, Toledo had to go all the way to the West Coast to play Fresno in a night game. So, to me, those are throwaway games. When you have a team that travels somewhere like that, that they haven't been very often, that's why I thought Eastern Michigan's play at San Diego State was so impressive. Those are the kind of games that I'm probably looking to throw away. Plus, Fresno was coming off a bye before playing Toledo. So now I tend to not look at that. I look at the entire grouping of the way these teams have played so far this year. Similar schedules, maybe Fresno, maybe 3 points higher when you take a look at the FBS competition. But, taking a look at my numbers on here, the line I've made, well, both my lines actually have Fresno being a 13.5-point favorite here. So leaning to that direction. But these are two teams that I think are bet on teams. Nevada had that bad game against Toledo. But, Vanderbilt, that was back when Vanderbilt was considered to be an up-and-coming team. They lose that game 41-10. I don't think Nevada played as bad in that game. They lost the turnover battle by 2. But since that point, they went at home against Oregon State, not a very good team at all, but they did win the turnover battle by 2. When you take a look at their successful plays, it's probably more of an even game. Toledo, they lose that game by 19, but successful plays, they were a little bit better. Early non-success rate was about even. Against Air Force last week, they really shut down the Air Force running attack. Air Force only had 32.9% successful plays. That was their second straight game on the road, and they were able to win that game by three. A lot of money coming in on Air Force in that one. So I just think these are two teams I want to bet on, and I'm probably going to, despite a couple-point advantage, one-point advantage, I don't think there's going to be anything here for me to want to play Fresno in this game. That Fresno defense, now granted, they did play a UCLA team who's really struggling offensively, but they allowed 34% successful plays. Toledo, 32.5, which is something you never see going against the Rockets. That offense is usually explosive. Minnesota, not the greatest offense, 37.1. So Fresno's defense has really been the leader here so far. And so we've got a Fresno defense going against a Nevada offense that has been basically pedestrian. They do play at a faster pace. It'll be interesting to see how many points are scored in this game. But, yeah, it'll be tough for me to go against Fresno, but I'm probably going to pass on this contest.
Well, and again, mostly the reason I selected this game is because I wanted to talk about that common opponents discussion, because I think that that's kind of a laziness thing that some people can get involved with. You have to look at the context of the games. By the way, Nevada came out to Toledo and actually outgained Toledo, won the box score in that game despite losing that game. But common opponents, you have to factor in so many different types of things. You know, Nevada runs a different style of offense than Fresno does. Toledo was at home for one game, traveling for another. So don't really use common opponents as something that, is a gauge for you in the marketplace. Maybe from a betting lines standpoint, you can use that a little bit to see how teams are sort of power rated, but not from a gameplay standpoint. You definitely don't want to do that. One more game I want to touch on here real quickly with you, Brian. Game 371-372, New Mexico State, UNLV. The reason I want to talk about this game here, Brian, Armani Rodgers out for UNLV. Now, we know that UNLV is all about running the football. Rodgers is a big part of that equation for them. They did, have some decent play in that game against Arkansas State. Played pretty well in that game overall. Had a bye, but they lose Rodgers. How much is Rodgers worth to the line to you, and how long do you think it takes UNLV to adjust?
Well, the backup is a highly touted transfer coming in. He was a four-star transfer, so I'm not expect too much of a drop-off. I dropped off 2 points. That may be a little more than what some others would be, but considering, as you talked about, UNLV's strength is running the football, I did a 2% drop-off. But, considering UNLV in their three FBS games are covered the spread every single game, maybe it's higher. Maybe the leadership in the job that Armani Rodgers was doing is going to be shown more impressive here. But keep in mind, they have had an extra week to prepare, so that should really help the offense in that regard. And you've got a New Mexico team who had a week off before they played Liberty, lost that game straight up, lost the turnover battle by three. Even though when you look at the advanced stats in that game, that New Mexico was clearly the better team. They held Liberty to 48% when it comes to early down success rate, 33.8% successful plays. Other than the Wisconsin game, which Wisconsin just ran the ball all over New Mexico, the Lobos have played very good defense the last two games. The UNLV defense has been very much improved from a year ago against USC, 38.4% success rate for USC. They struggled offensively so far, but it's still the athletes from USC. UTEP had a 44.1% success rate, but keep in mind, UNLV had 71.8% of their offensive play successful in that game. So that was one of those games that just got out of hand, and, then UTEP's passing the ball like crazy. So, But against Arkansas State, UNLV only 27.1% of successful plays, lost a turnover battle by three, and yet they covered the final score, 27-20, catching that hook. So I've been pretty impressed by this UNLV team so far, but we'll have to take a look at this game from the quarterback situation. The line is roughly what one of my numbers says. The power rating number only has it as six. but I have another based on the success rate and the advanced stats that I have UNLV by 11. So it's probably not a game in which I'm going to get involved with, but I think the defenses are going to rule the day here.
Max Gilliam, originally a Cal commit, and then goes and plays JUCO last year. A little bit more of a passing quarterback than Rodgers. So we'll see if UNLV throws some of those wrinkles into the mix here this week against New Mexico. Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. What do you guys got going on over there right now, Brian?
A lot of videos going up today. I've already placed some of my plays up on the site. I love this card this week. I already have, I think, two or three NFL plays up and some colleges. I'll have more up today. I love putting these plays up earlier in the week. We had a few of them last week that we put up early. We had the Rams minus 6.5. And, of course, that game either closes at 7 and they even hit 7.5. So you get these plays early. That's the way to do it. We try to get these plays up as soon as we possibly can, depending on the line movement. If it's a game I think is going to run into range, I'll play that later in the week. If I think it's a game that we're going to lose that number quickly, I put that up as early as possible for my clients, and it's worked out terrific. We've had a few games that we won by that extra hook, and that always helps with your final line at the end of the season. But really excited about this week, and I've got a couple of free plays up there right now. So check it all out at wagertalk.com.
And you can follow Brian on Twitter at BLeonardSports. Brian, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you. Best of luck to everyone.
Good stuff there as always from Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. One more guest here on the program for today. That is Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you doing today?
Doing well, man. Appreciate your time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. And, hey, man, you're adding another sport to your ongoing schedule today with the start of the NHL.
Yeah, and, you know, the NHL is one of those sports because I think it's impossible as sports bettors to do, like, everything on your own because you just don't have enough time in a day, time in a week, time in a year, time in a month. You don't have enough time. So the NHL is kind of one where the stuff I do is probably, like, just looking at for spots instead of really handicapping it full-time like you would with football or basketball or something like that. So what I basically do is I do that, and then you use your resources. I mean, when you meet other sports bettors, whether it's on social media or in your personal life or wherever you live, you know, you establish a network, and I think there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with, hey, I got a guy who knows hockey better than I do, so – you know, if you're going to follow somebody's place, follow somebody that knows something better than you do and collaborate with them. And maybe they follow something of yours that you know better than they do. So, I mean, with hockey added, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting. I think the first couple of weeks you're maybe looking just for like spot plays because you want to see how these teams look. And the fact that obviously what we saw last year, we saw some teams kind of go away from the defensive styles and more into a more offensive-friendly style. And I think the rules in the league and the way they're calling penalties, you know, it's like that almost across the board in sports now, where you're seeing a lot more teams that I think are offensive-minded. I mean, the best example of that, and I don't have the exact numbers, were the Devils. I mean, the Devils were always a very big under team. Control the possession, we're more defensive-minded, absorb the shots, block the shots. But now they're a lot more aggressive, and you saw a lot of their totals go over last year. You know, it used to be there'd be totals of 5, and they'd be juiced to the under because they were such low-scoring games. But then you saw them get to 5.5, over 5.5, even over 6s. So I think when you look in these totals this year, if the scoring starts out high, which I think that it will, you're going to see a lot more 6s on the board than you are, I think, your boilerplate 5.5 totals.
Yeah, and I agree with what you're saying about creating a network and looking for those people that, you know, you think are going to be good for you. And again, you know, my goal with Bang the Book and with Bang the Book Radio specifically has always been to help people learn, to encourage them to learn how to eventually wind up doing a lot of these things for themselves. You know, getting pushed in the right direction, understanding how the betting markets work, understanding the angles that you want to look for, putting together power ratings if you, you know, are so inclined. A lot of those things that are, you know, very important handicapping concepts are things that I try to push out here on the show. And then, you know, by extension, I want our listeners and our readers to be able to do a lot of these things for themselves. And there's no shame, as you mentioned, Wes, and I mean, you're somebody who does this, you know, full time and has done this for a long time. There's no shame in also having that network that you really trust. So I mentioned at the top of the show, Parker Michaels at bangthebook.com is phenomenal, at Creature on Twitter, K-R-E-A-T-T-U-R-E. I think somebody like Rob Pozzola, at Rob Pozzola, is very good. At Bet Andy Bet is very good as well. You know, there are some guys out there in the NHL betting community that, you know, they're going to wind up on the same sides more often than not because they're all similar handicappers in mindset. But there are some very good follows out there, not just guys that you can, you know, look to, you know, kind of tail along with their plays, but also to see how they go through the process, what they do. I know a lot of them use a fraction of Kelly criterion for their bet sizes as well. It's a money line sport, so it is a little bit different of an animal, but I think that, you know, if you look for spot plays, and I write an article about that every week, or you look for some of those people that are really good in this, specifically people like Parker, I think you can have some success in the NHL.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was talking to a friend of mine who the NHL is one of his primary sports, and, you know, just learning little things, you know, how he grades a game. And he actually was telling me that he grades a game, you know, he grades every game, whether he can watch it or not. I mean, it's impossible, I guess, to watch every single game, but looking at the numbers and then not only the ones that you actually watch with your own eyes, but looking at the different numbers and the stats, you know, when you're grading different games, are just different things to look for. I mean, and it sounds so profound, but it's not something people think about immediately. I mean, looking at maybe you got a team in the third period down a couple goals, so you expect that the team that's down is going to have more shots because they're down, so they have to be more aggressive on offense if they're down 3-1 or something in the third period. And then if you look at something like that and you don't see that they're out shooting the team that's leading the game, or that their shots, their quality of shots are not going up and they're not able to get pressure, then that's a team you may want to downgrade a little bit looking at something like that, because it's like, well, they're trailing and they still can't get any pressure on offense, and they still can't get the puck in the zone or keep it in the zone. So it's like little things like that you just kind of look at, and they sound so obvious, but a lot of times the obvious stuff is missed because we're focused on, you know, whether looking at the market on a team or looking at you know, just different stats and different metrics long term, you know, so we kind of sometimes miss the easy stuff in looking to find the winners. So I mean, just if you pick up little gradual things like that over time, you know, you're going to do nothing more than get better at this.
And one last thing I'll mention here about the NHL, and Wes, you know, given some of the people that we've referenced here so far, I know you know this as well, I'm a big believer in sabermetrics for Major League Baseball, and it is the sabermetrics crowd that runs that market, that produces the line moves that are out there. The modelers, the people that use the advanced statistics, will induce line moves in Major League Baseball. It's the same thing in the NHL, where we've had a lot more advanced metrics here of late, a lot more analytics. Though the people that use those are the people that move the markets out there in the NHL. NFL and college football, there's so much money involved. Numbers can move back and forth. Things can move around a little bit. You've got different sharp groups, stuff like that. When it comes to baseball in the NHL, a lot of times the sharp groups, the analytics groups, the modeler groups are going to be on the same side. So you're going to see those line moves. And if you start isolating some of those teams early on, just by paying attention to the market, you can get out there in front of some of these numbers, or at least get a little bit of closing line value on them.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And it's a thing, because I think when people talk about that stuff, you know, bettors, and I'll include myself in this, you know, look at it like, well, I'm not a really good math modeler. I don't really know how to do that. And you know, you get a little bit underconfident because you don't necessarily know how to do that. I don't think you necessarily have to know how to do that. I think it's more of gaining a basic understanding of why stuff is moving. You know, okay, why is that line moving this way? Why did that move 20 cents? You know, is it an injury? Is it thing that we're seeing in the metrics? And the thing about, like, metrics is the fact that they don't always necessarily stay the same. They change. I mean, I think baseball betting, and it will be interesting to see if somebody, if they haven't already, writes like a column on this, or, you know, somebody in the industry writes a big column on how this has changed baseball betting, is what Kevin Cash did with the Rays. And you saw a couple teams kind of follow suit in spots where, you know, I don't have the five traditional starters that I'm trying to get six innings out of, you know, and get or five or six innings out of and get quality starts. I mean, how many times did we see all those starters for the Rays go two innings or go one and two thirds? And that totally changes betting, because when you're looking at like a baseball side, you're saying, okay, how many innings is this guy going to go? And you're looking at all the stuff and you're comparing the XFIP with the ERA, and you're looking at the stats through nine innings and all of that stuff, or how a guy strands runners, or what the ground ball rate is, you know, all the usual stuff that you look at, but it totally changes. And I got to tell you, I was probably slow to adjust, and I think a lot of people were slow to adjust when they see, you know, you've got a starting pitcher that you're hoping is going to go five or six. Well, oh, by the way, he's only going to go one and two thirds, and then they're going to have a bunch of pitching changes and, you know, have five or six guys out there instead of your traditional starter going six, having a seventh and eighth inning guy, and then having a closer. So, I mean, these things like constantly change. And that's, I think, the most difficult part of it, is to just kind of keep up and be able to adjust, because we're all creatures of habit. So we fall into, well, this is what I've always done. This is what I know how to do. And it's probably why I think I do it better in the sports where it's a little less metrics heavy, because I think situations, you know, stay the same over time. I mean, there's always situational spots and fundamental and psychological spots, but you are absolutely right. Baseball and hockey are very much becoming more numbers oriented sports.
Well, I mean, my cold, dead sabermetrician heart absolutely loves that there's an opener tonight in the wild card game for the Oakland Athletics. And you mentioned the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, when I wrote my daily picks and tips piece, I basically bypassed just about every Rays game because, A, there wasn't a line on the board when I was writing it early morning, and B, it was a legitimate pain in the ass to find out who was going to follow the opener. You had to go through, check all the different beat writers, go to their specific blog pages on their newspaper websites, try to figure out who was actually going to follow that guy. Now, of course, if you kind of kept the schedule and paid attention to when Ryan Yarbrough was pitching or Austin Pruitt or somebody like that, you could figure it out. But it was just something that I didn't really take the time to do because those lines weren't up there in the morning anyway when I was writing that article. But it does have an impact. And I wrote about it a little bit today in my picks and tips piece of Liam Hendricks may throw the first inning. I mean, we saw Milwaukee in the last week of the regular season use an opener for one batter in Matt Carpenter and then go to, you know, a guy to follow the opener. So it does really change the dynamic because a lot of times MLB is so starting pitcher heavy with a handicap. Right now, obviously, we don't have any equivalent in the NHL because you're not going to have like an opener for a starting goaltender or something like that. But there are things that are constantly changing in those metric heavy sports as teams look for the next inefficiency. You know, I mean, football is by and large football. I mean, there are intricacies with play calling, play design, running on early down situations, stuff like that. But, you know, over time, football is football. And MLB and NHL, you're seeing teams do a lot more experimentation to try and find those edges over some of the other teams that are out there. So I think it's a very fascinating discussion. And maybe I'll write something on the opener here once we get into Major League Baseball offseason. But, Wes, I want to make sure I spend a couple of time or a couple of minutes here on the NFL, and then we'll wrap things up with some golf analysis for the Safeway Open. I want to touch on a couple of games here that have seen line moves, and I want to talk about them from a derivative standpoint, because we've touched on this a little bit before that, you know, you're busy, I'm busy, our listeners out there are busy, whether they're working or spending time with the kids or whatever else, sometimes you're just not going to be able to get a number. There are opportunities to use the derivative market to your advantage in some of those instances to still get some line value, even though you miss the full game value. So maybe we can use these two games as a little bit of an example. First one is 465, 466, Miami and Cincinnati, up to 6.5 market wide. Looks like we could be going to 7 market wide sooner rather than later. 5 dimes is already there. So, Wes, is this one of those spots where you didn't get 5.5, you didn't get 6, looks like 7's a possibility. Can you still use the derivative to your advantage?
I think you can. I mean, you know, looking at the just the kind of giving a basic overview, I mean, there's you can see why the money is moving against Miami because they started better than I think everybody projected them to be going 3-0. And then they went to a New England team that has started off rough, and that was a really good spot for New England. But yet you didn't see – I mean, you didn't see a huge line move on New England. It's not like that moved through 7. I mean, it pretty much stayed under 6.5, under 7 and 6 and 6.5. And because I ended up using New England in a teaser and not using them laying the points because I wasn't quite sure. And New England kind of exposed Miami, even though I think they're improved, is maybe not quite yet ready for prime time. But then you see Cincinnati, who a lot of people were on last week. It wasn't like a pros versus Joes or public versus, you know, sharps or whatever. I mean, you had a combination of a lot of different groups on Cincinnati last week, and it looked like they were going to let the cover slip away, and then all of a sudden they score on the last drive and, you know, not only cover but win outright. So perception obviously right now is very high on Cincinnati. I mean, I think if you're looking to get the Bengals now and you didn't get them from the opener, you probably maybe would want to look first half. And if you look at, if you have like a screen or something, you'll notice that a lot of first half lines are not out for the NFL. And the reason why I think sometimes those can be such an advantage is because that market matures, you know, a lot quicker. I mean, they're not up Sunday night, Monday. There's no look ahead line for the first half, like at the Westgate 10 days before. So you don't have a lot of time with these bees because they put them up Friday or Saturday, sometimes even on game day at some places. So, you know, that's why I think you could get the advantage because you don't have all week of kind of going back and forth on what the full game point spread is like you do on the on these games. So if you like Cincinnati, maybe the first half would be the way to go. I mean, the higher this climbs, the more I'm going to like the Dolphins. Because I think the perception on them is low, and I think on the Bengals is obviously super high, and their offense has been really improved this year. They're not as much of a defensive team as maybe they've been in years past. So, you know, that's something I think you got to look at for that particular game.
Well, of course, too, I mean, you've got Cincinnati in a spot here where a teaser makes a little bit more sense because you can get down through 3 and 4, take them down to a pick 'em or minus a half point. So, again, that's another way to sort of counteract the fact that you did miss a good number at 5.5, take it down in a teaser, probably with Carolina. I think Carolina will be a very popular teaser this week as they're a 7-point favorite. Now, you get them off a 7 through 6 through 4 and 3, down to 1 or half a point, depending on the teaser that you pick. So you can use those to your advantage as well when it comes to teasers and line moves and things of that sort. But also, as Wes was saying, maybe you take the first half. Maybe, you know, if you like Cincinnati, you think Miami back-to-back road games. Maybe Cincinnati plays better in the second half. So now that the number is 6.5, you wait, see how the first half goes. Maybe Miami leads 10-7 or, you know, 14-10, something like that going into halftime. You get a little bit better of an adjusted game number on Cincinnati, and maybe the game still plays out the way that you expected it to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, then teasers are obviously a way to get down where maybe the line value, you know, if the number gets away from you just a little bit, teasers and not lose much. And I think Cincinnati will be popular. You mentioned Carolina. I think obviously the Rams will be popular in a teaser. I mean, to be able to tease them down to -1 as, you know, they look obviously going into week five, they look like the best team in the NFL right now. So, of course, you're going to see people tease that down to minus one, even though it's a road divisional road game. I don't think people will care. They'll just see that number and jump all over it. But, I think you're exactly right. I mean, you know, you could see Miami maybe sleeping or catching Cincinnati sleeping. I mean, this is back-to-back road games. Usually a team like that, I think, is better in the first half than they are in the second half. I mean, that's what you kind of see with travel. You know, if you have a West Coast team traveling to an East Coast team, people think, oh, it's because it's such an early kickoff time. These guys are going to come out and they're going to be half dead. Well, more often than not, they actually come out okay in the first half because they've adjusted their body clocks because, you know, these organizations aren't as stupid as we think. And really, if they have dead legs, going to show more in the second half.
All right, so let's talk about the other side of the coin here. Because in a situation like Miami and Cincinnati, you have options. You tease Cincinnati down. You wait and see how the first half plays out. Maybe play them in the second half. Because as mentioned, you know, you expect Miami to be a little bit more sluggish there in the second half off back-to-back road games. It's a different situation, one spot down the board, game 467, 468. Oakland and the Chargers, where this number has gone down from 7 to 5.5. Some places still showing 6. Those are the more public books out there, Bovada and MyBookie. It's very clear that Oakland is the sharp side here in this game, Wes. So can you use derivatives to your advantage here in this situation?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, you definitely want to look when it was plus 7, you know, the first half wasn't put out. Had it been put out, you would have been getting 4 or 3.5 on the Raiders. Now, the couple places offshore that have it out will have it Oakland pretty much flat plus 3. So, I mean, there's obviously still a little bit more value because it's on flat plus 3 instead of, you know, the fact that you could have had 7 and now you have to take 5. I mean, you know, 6, I'm not saying it's necessarily a total key number, but it is a number where you'll see a lot of games land. So I don't think right now if you like Oakland, you want to take 5 when you could have had 7. I mean, this isn't like a dead number thing where a line drops from 5 to 4.5 or 4, where it's usually not going to matter, even though ironically enough it did matter in the Monday night game if you took Denver plus 5, you know, early in the week, you got the win. And if you took it plus 4, like I did, you got the push. And obviously, if you took it on game day, you didn't win. So, you know, even on, I mean, it's just a general practice of trying to get the best numbers that you can, but you're not always going to be able to do that. But it's also knowing when to say, okay, maybe I had to wait on this and maybe I had to wait on a live betting opportunity. Or see if you get some money on the Chargers or movement on them late in the week. Teams that I think, you know, Oakland finally got that win, and then you saw a Chargers team that really couldn't get away from San Francisco at all. So, you know, the Chargers certainly have a lot of question marks. And I agree with the initial move, but, you know, I can't follow it off a key number like 7.
Well, I just wanted to, you know, touch on some of the derivative opportunities that are out there. Obviously, teasers play into the equation. But, you know, don't get frustrated. Don't get down if you miss a number. Because with live betting now and, of course, with first and second half betting, you can still extract some value from that number. So, yeah, maybe you missed it. Maybe you don't want to take 5 or 5.5 when 7 or 6.5 were out there. That's perfectly understandable because the number means a lot in the NFL. But there are going to be some opportunities for you as long as you're paying attention, as long as you're being astute, and as long as, you know, you're paying attention during the game. Because, again, I think live betting and derivative betting really are the future here in this industry. And, Wes, I imagine you'll agree with me with that sentiment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you're seeing so many sports with the live betting options. You've seen it in baseball. I mean, perfect example, you know, what we were talking about, like if, you know, let's say Hendricks goes the first inning and then all of a sudden they're going with to the bullpen in the second inning. You know, this is what, I mean, what you have to do because these guys are, using metrics, you know, the actual teams and the managers are using them. So the bettors kind of at least have to pay attention to them and use them. And then, you know, NBA, I think, is almost like a quintessential live betting sport, because when you get the rotations down after you've watched these teams for a couple weeks and you know when a certain guy leaves the game, that something's going to happen. It used to happen with Chris Paul and the Clippers all the time. 3-minute mark of the first quarter, that last TV timeout under three, he goes to the bench, and then all of a sudden you would see on live betting, you would see people bet the other side, because all of a sudden, you know, Clippers be up 6 or 7, and all of a sudden they get back into the middle of the second quarter when he comes back in the game and they're either tied or they're down. So it's looking at these, you know, substitution patterns, looking at rotations. And I mean, so those are, I think, are the options. And I got to admit, as a better, it used to drive me crazy, because it's like, well, I lean to the Oakland side and now I can't get 7. You know, it's like, oh, do I have to take 6 before this is going to drop anymore? But now it's kind of to the thing where it's like, you know, maybe I ought to wait, because maybe San Diego gets the ball, or L.A. now. I knew I was going to do that. Gets the ball first and they score and it's 7-0. Well, all of a sudden I'm going to get 8.5 or 9 in the game. So, you know, it's actually could be a blessing in disguise, even if you're not a big live bettor, because it allows you to narrow down your card a little bit more and be a little more selective, knowing that there is a possibility you see that number. And also knowing, you know, maybe you don't see it, but then it's like, well, okay, at least I didn't, you know, go after a line and get a loser on a game. You know, being patient actually, you know, paid off for me in the long run.
Great stuff. Great breakdown there, Wes. I think you really nailed what you're looking to do with live betting. And then, of course, all the derivative stuff that you do as well. All right, let's transition over to the golf side for a couple of minutes here. And let's talk about, incredibly enough, the start of the PGA Tour season is Thursday. The wraparound portion begins here this week. We've got the Asian Swing coming up, including the first WGC event. So golf now a year-round sport as well. Basically, they do take a holiday break, then start things up after the new year with the Tournament of Champions out in Hawaii. But for all intents and purposes, golf is a year-round sport here. So, Wes, we've got the Safeway Open this week at Silverado Country Club in Napa. Not a whole lot of high-end players in this thing. Only 2 of the final 30 from the FedEx Cup playoffs are in it. Patrick Cantlay, Phil Mickelson, those two guys. A lot of other intriguing names there. But, you know, these are very important handicaps early on in the season, because you've got young players, or maybe players that haven't won in a while, with great shots to do so.
Yeah, and also the fact that because you're not getting, you know, these full usual fields where you're getting all the high-end players playing in the same week. I mean, you know, even looking over at the Dunhill Links championship on the European Tour, which is basically what the Pebble Beach Pro-Am is for the PGA Tour, that's probably the most appropriate analogy. You have 4 Ryder Cuppers playing over there this week. You have a couple Europeans, Tommy Fleetwood, Tyrrell Hatton, a couple American with Tony Finau, Brooks Koepka are playing this event, but you're not seeing a lot of them. And then you have 1 Ryder Cupper here in the Safeway Open, and that's Phil Mickelson. But it's interesting on this PGA Tour, because a lot of these guys, you know, some of these guys you'll see out here are kind of like new names, like a, let's for instance say a Sam Burns or a Sungjae Im, because these are guys that played on the web.com tour that got their cards. And, you know, this is when these guys have to play, I think, to take advantage and pick up those early FedEx Cup points and pick up money when you don't have the top 30 players in the official world golf rankings playing every week. And then the European Tour is such a different dynamic looking at that, because they still kind of have their FedEx Cup playoffs coming up in November with the Race to Dubai. So you're going to see a lot more of these European players play a lot more toward the end of the year than you would the top-end PGA Tour guys.
Well, as we look at the field here for the Safeway Open, Patrick Cantlay plus 1,200 is your favorite. Brant Snedeker second on the board at 20-1. Ryan Moore 22. Phil Mickelson, Emiliano Grillo, 25. Joaquin Niemann, the Chilean teenager, he's 25-1 as well. He had a very good showing on the PGA Tour last year. Denny McCarthy, one of the top web.com players, is 28-1. Then a bunch of guys on down from there. Yesterday, we had Brian Blessing mention Bo Hostler at the end of the segment. He's down from 40-1 to 35-1 here. Wes, I know you're probably still working through your handicap of this tournament, but anybody, you know, anybody stand out to you? Anybody that fits this course well?
Well, there was one name that you mentioned that I did play that you said Brian Blessing mentioned. I also played Bo Hostler at 40-1. Hostler was a guy that, you know, kind of as a rookie on the PGA Tour, got himself in position, got himself on the first pages of the leaderboard, but had a couple tough Sundays. But he did have 2 second-place finishes this year at Hartford for the Travelers, and then, of course, lost the playoff in Houston to Ian Poulter. But this is a kid that I think, you know, sometimes when you don't win right away, people kind of forget about you. But I think this is a guy that's ready to win and is going to win sooner rather than later. Ironically enough, one guy that I took on a future, the lowest price I took, I got him 28, but was, in fact, Phil Mickelson. Now, when you look at how bad Phil Mickelson played in the Ryder Cup, and you look at the fact that he was dead last in the Tour Championship, who the hell is going to want Phil Mickelson? But this is about, like, fitting a course. And I think he fits this course a little bit better. He's played this event twice. He's been 3rd and 8th the last 2 years. He obviously knows that this is a weaker field. And Phil Mickelson is not, you know, even though maybe you see him hit dumb shots, he's not a dummy. He knows that he does not have as many avenues to win on the PGA Tour anymore because, I mean, he's older and, you know, the quality of players are better. The field is deeper than ever. So he's going to go to places where he's going to be successful. And this is a place where he's gone and has been successful. And I think this is also a course that's not a really long course. It's about 7,100 yards, tree-lined. It's not similar in the fact that it's not really at altitude, but this does remind me a little bit of the WGC Mexico, where Phil won earlier this year at around a similar price, because this course allows Phil to keep his driver in the bag, which I think is never really a bad thing considering how all over the place he is with that particular club. So I don't think Phil, even though people I don't think want him, the fact that he's coming over from Paris, the fact that he looked absolutely awful, and I mean not even close in the Ryder Cup, but, you know, that course over there doesn't fit Phil because Phil doesn't put it in the fairway enough. Now you get to a place like this where the fairways are wider and the fact that maybe he can use his 3-metal or his irons a little bit more than his driver, I think makes this beneficial for him.
There are a couple of guys that I tipped in my Daily Fantasy Picks piece, and I want to run these two names past you. Brandon Harkins is one of them. He's 100-1 here this week. He was actually born in Walnut Creek, which is less than an hour from this course. And one of the things about these early events, you know, these events here in early October, and then also some of the events in November, and then on into January and February, a lot of them in California. There are some guys that just play extremely well with the West Coast courses. Brandon Harkins, one of them, top 10 at the Career Builder last year, 12th at the Farmers, that's at Torrey Pines. So he played really well in a couple of very big events there out west. And then Chesson Hadley is another one who last year he was 3rd in this event, 2nd at the Sanderson Farms, 4th at the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open. You know, another guy that played really well early in the year, played well out west. And that's one of the important things I think about these tournaments is that you've got a lot of inconsistent types of players, but they're very comfortable playing in certain situations at certain courses. And a lot of these guys, because they play these events regularly, I think they have a decent shot at them, play well on the West Coast.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, you mentioned Harkins, that's a guy that makes a ton of birdies. And you know, if you follow this week to week, when you see some of these guys appear on leaderboards over and over again, you just see those patterns. I mean, a guy like Jamie Lovemark, who's 60-1 this week, will probably get some play because he's typically a solid West Coast player. And then, you know, you look at some of the guys that were on the leaderboards in the summer and before the fall, a guy like Bronson Berggood, he was on the first page of the leaderboard quite frequently in the summer in some of these events where you had kind of split guys, some guys playing in Europe, some guys playing here. So Harkins is one of those. One guy played with Sam Burns, who's not a California guy, but a guy that won his card via the Web 25 before even going to the Web.com Tour Finals because they had two separate sets of guys. I mean, the top 25 regular season money list and then the top 25 in the four finals events. So, you know, you're seeing a lot of these new names out here that and then some guys maybe that were rookies last year that didn't win but had some good finishes. Tyler Duncan, 125-1. I mean, these are those type of events where, you know, you maybe want to have a long shot or two on your card. And if, you know, play partially on a future, play it partially maybe on a top 10 if you've got a book that's going to offer top 10s or top 20s. And, you know, play some of these guys because it's not going to be all chalk win these fall series events.
I think it's an excellent point. They're from Wes Reynolds. You can follow his work on Twitter, at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, we appreciate your time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again here soon.
Pleasure, Adam. You have a good one.
Good stuff there with Wes. Good breakdown of both the derivative market for the NFL and then also the golf market here with an event where you don't have a lot of big-name players, but you can look to take some of those shots that are out there. All right, let's talk Major League Baseball. Let's talk the playoffs here. I know a lot of my readers and Twitter followers and listeners are really invested in what I'm about to talk about here with regards to the Major League Baseball futures market. Now, I will preface this by saying that I cannot give you an exact answer. When it comes to any future, I cannot give you an exact answer. And maybe that will piss some people off, and I do apologize for that. But there are a lot of factors that are in play when you talk about a discussion of hedging futures, because it's dependent on the price that you got, because I know some people got the Indians as high as 20-1 or 22-1. Others have the Indians in the 11, 12, 15-1 range, depending on what they had available to them, depending on when they went out there and got that futures price. So, excuse me, what you're going to want to do with a hedge is going to be dramatically different if you've got 22-1 versus 11-1. Also, what you're going to want to do from a hedging standpoint is going to be very, very different based on your risk tolerance, based on your initial investment. And everybody's initial investment, everybody's risk tolerance is going to be different across the board. So I cannot give you an exact answer on what you want to do. What I can do is lay out the options that are available to you. So because the Indians are the most popular futures play that I've been asked about, because they're one I talked about all summer long on the Bettors Box, I'll start with them. Look, the reason we took the Indians from a futures standpoint is because they were guaranteed to win their division. Look at the Chicago Cubs. The Chicago Cubs were tied for the most wins in the National League during the regular season, and they are no longer in the playoffs. That's why futures are a little bit dangerous. That's why you want to focus on the teams that are going to win their divisions. Even the Dodgers needed game 163 to win the West. When it became apparent that the Braves were going to win the East, that's when you wanted to hop on a future with them. It was apparent from the start of 2016 that the Indians were going to win the Central Division in 2018. The Indians are going to win the Central Division in 2019 too. I hate to spoiler alert that for you. I'm sorry if you're a fan of the Twins, White Sox, Tigers, or Royals, but the Indians are winning the Central Division again next year. So the reason why you invest in a team like that is because they don't have to play that wild card game last night that the Rockies and Cubs had to play. You know, the reason why you invest in teams that are clear-cut leaders to win the division is because they're going to make the playoffs. That's why it was difficult to do something with Boston and New York, at least up until Boston started to pull away, because you didn't know which one of those teams was going to wind up in the wild card game. For New York, they may have won over 100 games this season, and they may have won exactly 100 games this season, it may be over for them tonight. So you do that hard work in the regular season, you go 162, and then it's over in the blink of an eye in a one-game playoff. That can happen. So the reason why we took the Indians, why I drilled them down or drilled them so hard on the show, is because they were going to get us to this position. Now the question is, what do we do with this position? Now, if you've got anything 18-1, 20-1, 22-1 or higher, I think it's very easy to go ahead and make a play on the Astros series price. I'm seeing minus 150 out there at Bet Online. I haven't seen a ton of books with prices on the series here so far. I'll kind of take a quick look here and see if I can shop around and kind of figure out where some of these different books are situated. But that's the price that we've got out there right now, is about Houston minus 150 or so. So if you've got a big number on the Cleveland futures price in the 18, 20, 22 to 1 range, I would look to hedge immediately. I think the Astros are the favorite in this series. The line implies that they win this series 60% of the time. I think a 60-40 split on this series is very fair. I think a lot of people would look at this series and say it's going to go five games, which would mean Houston going 3-2, ironically enough, winning 60% of the games. I think that's probably the way that this series does ultimately play out. So if you've got a big price on the Indians, you take Houston right away at minus 150. How much do you take them for? Well, that's up to you. That's based on your initial investment. Let's say that you've got maybe a half unit on Cleveland at 20-1. Half unit based on what you usually bet at 20-1. So you're getting a 10-1 return basically on a full unit. So what do you do? Maybe you do a unit and a half on the Houston price. Because again, keep in mind here, the function of every futures bet that you make is to guarantee profit. The reason we took the Indians is because you can guarantee profit because they were going to make the playoffs. Obviously, you want the Indians to win the World Series. And obviously, I do as well. But the goal is to make money here. So you have to decide how much money you want to make and how much risk you want to be in this equation. Because let's say that you hedge a unit and a half on the Astros. Okay, so if the Astros win this series, you make a unit. Is that good enough for you over, you know, holding that bet for 4 months? I hope that it is, because you've guaranteed yourself profit, which is the goal of a futures price. Now, let's say the Indians upset the Astros in this series. Then you've got effectively two units on the Indians to win 10 units, so to speak. So then you have to look at it as, what are my hedging options as the Indians go forward? Well, I think they're maybe a slight dog to Boston, maybe a plus 100, minus 120 situation, maybe plus 105, minus 125, something like that. I think they're probably favored over the Yankees because they would have home field advantage in that series. So I think that the Indians would probably be a slight favorite over New York, maybe minus 120, something like that. So you'd have an even money hedge possibility on New York in that situation, or maybe plus 105, maybe plus 110. I'm just kind of guessing with the numbers. They're kind of going off of what I think they may look like. And of course, these could change with injuries and how teams look in the division series, all that type of thing. But I think you have to keep in mind is, if you hedge Houston, again, let's say you've got a half unit position on the Indians, you go a unit and a half on Houston to get yourself a unit's worth of profit. Then you've got two units in the equation on the Indians' future. Then you have to think about it long term. What do you do in the second round in the ALCS if the Indians advance so that you can guarantee profit? Do you put two units on New York at even money, just cash out, break even? You can do that. Do you put a little bit more on New York to try and give yourself a profit? You can do that, because the Indians will be favored over any National League team in the World Series if they get past Houston and one of Boston and New York. They're just going to be the favorite. So there's also that factor that goes into the equation. Maybe if they play the Dodgers, they could be a small underdog, I guess. But I think over pretty much any NL team, they'd be a favorite. So you've got to think about this long term as well, of how much do I have to keep investing against the Indians to guarantee my profit. So if you've got a big price on the Indians, it gives you some more wiggle room with that Astros series price. Now, another thing that you can do, and you can certainly look to do this if you've got a smaller price on the Indians, 10, 12 to 1, something like that, see if the Indians win game one. You've got Corey Kluber against Justin Verlander. Looking at that line right now out there in the marketplace, you've got Houston listed as about a minus 140 favorite. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that the Indians win game one. If the Indians win game one, you're probably going to get Houston at a plus money price, given that they're minus 150 now. If the Indians win game one, I would say Houston's probably plus 105, plus 110, plus 115, something in that type of range, maybe even a little bit higher than that. Then you've got a very easy hedge. You've got the Indians with your 10 or 12 to 1 ticket. You've got Houston at plus money. Very easy for you to hedge into that without a significant investment. Now, of course, the downside to that is if the Indians lose game one, Houston's over a minus $2 favorite for the rest of this series. So then you'd have to make a bigger investment against that Indians futures ticket. So this is why I can't give you a clear answer, a clear example of what you want to do, of how you want to set up the dollar amounts for this, because it's based on your initial Indians investment, your risk tolerance, and how you envision this series actually going. Do you like the Indians in this series? If you have an Indians futures ticket and you like the Indians in this series because they've hit Justin Verlander before, or because the bullpen is a lot better than it was during the season, or for some other reason, maybe you want to hold that investment a little bit longer and see what happens. So this is why I can't give you a concrete answer, but those are your options. Hedge right away. Guarantee yourself profit if Houston wins. Wait and see if the Indians win game one, then hedge with a better series price on Houston. Or you can obviously let it ride, depending on the size of your initial investment. Again, if your initial investment is very low and you're not so much worried about losing that amount outright, wait and see if you get a better price on Houston. Try to increase your profit potential. Try to increase your profit margin a little bit by waiting it out. But I think a lot of people here, because they've had that investment out there for several months, are going to get a little bit of an itchy trigger finger, want to secure some profit on Houston. I do think ultimately that Houston does win the series, as I said. I do think it happens in five games. How we get to that point, I don't know. Do the Indians take a 1-0 lead? If this is a 1-1 series going back to Cleveland, are the Indians a favorite in a best of three with home field advantage? That's another factor you have to consider here. Do the Indians go to minus 115 or minus 120 if they split in Houston? I think it's a very realistic possibility. So you can wait this one out a little bit, see how game one goes, see how game two goes. Obviously, the problem in all of this is that if Houston's up 2-0, your hedge price is probably minus 300. So if the Indians come back and win this series 3-2 after going down 2-0, much like the Yankees did to them last season, then you've got very little profitability left on that Indians ticket because you have to bet minus 300 to win a unit to cover the half unit you put at 12-1, 15-1, 20-1, something like that. So if it was me, and I'm just assuming a half unit, we'll go a full unit, I guess, worth of investment on the Indians for this futures price. I'm probably waiting because I think Corey Kluber is a decent matchup against Houston. So I think there is the opportunity the Indians do split at worst in Houston. There is the chance. Carlos Carrasco is very, very good, by the way, that they go up 2-0 in this series. That is a possibility. Is it a likely possibility? No, probably not. But I have a little bit higher of a risk profile than some people out there might. So I'd be willing to wait and see what happens here a little bit if you're so inclined to do that. If you just want to try and guarantee yourself profit, go ahead and take Houston minus 150. You can also do a partial hedge of Houston minus 150, maybe to get back your initial investment. So, you know, what would that be? Maybe about a unit to win a half unit, something like that. Then you break even if Houston wins. Then you've got the Indians ticket live if they move on. But again, you want to try to guarantee profit. Do you want to tie up money for 3 or 4 months just for a break-even proposition? The answer is probably no. So again, this is dependent on the price you have on Cleveland, your initial investment, and what you think about how this series is going to play out. So that's why I can't give you an exact answer here. And I love futures discussions. I love discussions of hedging, but the problem is that ultimately the ball is in your court with what you want to do. I can't tell you what to do really from this point forward. I can give you your options, but I can't tell you how to play them out because that's based on you, your bankroll, and your risk tolerance. So we are in a position to make money. That was the goal of making this Indians futures price or making this Indians futures bet. We're in a position to make money. Now it's up to you to decide how you want to extract your value from that type of bet. So again, you've got an easy hedge with Astros minus 150, a very reasonable price to hedge a 10, 12, 15, 20 to 1 ticket. But obviously the higher the ticket, the more flexibility, the more wiggle room you have to keep that profit potential going if the Indians do win this series. And like I said, I think they're a favorite over New York, maybe a small dog to Boston, and a favorite over every NL team except for maybe the Dodgers when we get around to the World Series. So that factors into your hedging equation as well. So again, I wish I could tell you exactly what to do, but we are in a position to lock up profit because we've got the Indians in the playoffs with a good futures price on them. Hopefully, again, like I said, most of you out there hopefully have that 20 to 1 ticket, which gives you a lot more flexibility, a lot more opportunity. Again, this is why you don't play chalk from a futures standpoint. The lower the price, the fewer options you have. If you have somebody like a Boston or a New York at 5 or 6 to 1, something like that, you don't have a lot of hedging opportunities. Now, in a Boston-New York series, it's going to be pretty closely lined. I would say, you know, maybe Boston minus 135, minus 140, something like that, because they have home field and you've got Sale at least twice in the division series. But you've got 5 or 6 to 1, so you don't have a whole lot of hedging opportunity in there. That's why you want to look for some of those medium shots, some of those longer shots, or those teams that are guaranteed to avoid that wild card game. The Indians were in that spot and a little bit of a mid-range shot among the contenders. So that's why we took them from a series price standpoint. But again, I will reiterate this one more time. I cannot tell you exactly what to do, but your options are Houston right now at minus 150, or you can always wait and see where other books open up that line. Maybe someone pops a minus 140, something like that. Wait and see what happens in game one. Wait and see if Cleveland gets a split going back home, or let your Cleveland future ride. And then look to do something with Houston a little bit deeper in the series. And again, if this goes five, it's a back and forth series. You may end up just being able to take the game five money line with Houston in a spot where that game should be probably what the series price line is right now or thereabouts. So a lot of complex options here for this series. Again, it depends on your risk tolerance. If you want to hedge right now, I do think Houston ultimately ends up beating the Indians. But you know, this is the tournament of variance, as I like to call it. A lot of strange things happen in the Major League Baseball playoffs. So, you know, there aren't a whole lot of certainties out there. That being said, as I transition over to the Braves and Dodgers series, Dodgers minus 225. If you have a Braves ticket, I recommend hedging immediately. I think the Braves are in a very bad spot here. I wrote up my preview for this series over at bangthebook.com, finished that up here this morning. I have a hard time seeing the Braves win this series. The Dodgers have been inconsistent. They've been frustrating, but they have so much more depth all over in the key areas than Atlanta has in this series. So if you've got an Atlanta price, you hedge. If you have a Dodgers price, let it go. I think they advance. I think they do so in probably 3 or 4 games. I don't think we see a return trip to Chavez Ravine here. So I do think the Dodgers minus 225 will prevail in this series. If you've got a Braves futures ticket, which would be at a bigger price than the Indians one, I would hedge right away with the 225 because I think the ride stops here for Atlanta. No series price on the Rockies and the Brewers right now. I would say the Brewers will be a slight favorite in that series, but I don't know how popular of a favorite they will be because a lot of people do not like that Milwaukee starting rotation. Now, if you've read my work, listen to the Bettors Box, you know that I believe a lot more in the Brewers rotation than the market predominantly does. I believe in what they're doing from a contact management standpoint. I do think the Brewers do advance from that series. And I also think, too, game one is a very precarious spot for Colorado because they went from Los Angeles to Chicago. Now they go up to Milwaukee. It is a short trip, same time zone, but you partied it up late into the night for winning that wild card game there on Tuesday night. Make that flight to Milwaukee on Wednesday. Then you got to get ready to play again on Thursday. And it's a whirlwind. 3 cities in 4 days, 2 very high stress games. Tough spot in game one, I think, for Colorado. So I think if you want to take a Brewers series price, I would do it right away. because I think they probably do prevail in game one. Then you wait and see what the Rockies look like after game one, if you do like them a little bit. But I do think that that spot in game one, very tough. And furthermore, game two, maybe even more difficult, because you get the adrenaline of game one. You know, you're in the division series. You've got a loud crowd there at Miller Park. We'll see if it's open or closed based on the weather. Could be extremely raucous in there if it's closed. You know, the Brewers obviously starved for some playoff appearances. So, you know, this is a situation where I think Colorado's in tough shape going up there for the first two games, given what they've done here over the last 3 days. So that kind of factors into the series price a little bit too, where I think you grab the Brewers early. Maybe if you want to play Colorado, you do it after game one. I think Colorado's in a tough spot here. Are they the better team? They could be. But with the way Milwaukee's playing right now with their offense, with the way that I think they're going to game plan for Colorado here in this series, you know, they already knew everything about Chicago. So they've been using their advanced scouts to study up on Colorado. So they got a bit of a head start with that head-to-head matchup. And as I mentioned in my picks and tips piece on Tuesday, you know, when you talk about the Major League Baseball playoffs, when you talk about advanced scouting, you know, during the season, you're scouting future opponents, you're scouting competitors for trade possibilities, you're scouting free agents for the upcoming offseason. When it's the playoffs, you have one job. You are scouting the team that you are playing right now. And if that series gets off to a good start for you, some people may start scouting your next possible opponent. But for right now, and this is especially true of the Indians-Astros series, the Indians and Astros have known that they're playing each other for about the last month. They know everything about hitter tendencies, heat maps, spray charts, pitcher usage, usage on pitch counts. You name it, they know it. So that's one of the reasons why this is such a tournament of variance, because the margins are so small. With all the studying that you're doing, it is exclusively about execution. And one team's going to execute and one team's not. And that's not always going to be the favorite. It's not always going to be the underdog. But the Major League Baseball playoffs are an animal unto themselves. So I think that you know you want to keep that in your mind as well. It's a different type of run environment, a lot of lower scoring types of games, offense coming not exclusively by the home run, but with a higher frequency by the home run. We've had, you know, effectively three playoff games here so far. The two game 163s in the wild card game, 8 of 14 runs directly from home runs in these three games. I would expect that to continue. You know, do you want to back the team with more power? Maybe that could be the case. But you know, that's the thing about the playoffs here is that, you know, you set yourself up for opportunities to make money with some of these futures tickets. And I think from an individual game standpoint, and I've talked about this already in my picks and tips piece twice, I start with a position on the team that I do like a little bit more or the team that I think I'm getting value with. So for tonight, for example, I think I'm getting value on Oakland plus 170 because I expect this to be a bullpen game. And I do not think that the Yankees bullpen is 60 or 70 cents better than Oakland's bullpen. I don't think that that's the case at all. So you start with a position on Oakland. Then you look to live bet. And the playoffs are fantastic for live betting because you start to see pitcher usage. You watch the game closely. You can see when that starter starting to falter a little bit. The first sign of a drop in command, and managers are ready to pull the plug. So you get a lot of live betting opportunities here in the playoffs, whereas, you know, in the regular season, managers won't be as aggressive with pulling those starters from the game. Won't be as aggressive with using premier relievers in the fourth and fifth inning. The playoffs are a different kind of animal. So a lot of different betting tactics, different betting angles involved on a game-by-game basis. So I think live betting is the way to go. You can take a pregame position if you want to, like I would with Oakland tonight, and then see how things played out. Took a pregame position with Chicago yesterday. Kyle Freeland was much, much better than I anticipated coming in on short rest. You know, did get out of a jam or two there. Ottavino got out of a big jam as well. That was a game where things could have changed in an instant. And you get these run-scoring situations with runners in scoring position, but you're almost always in the playoffs facing a high strikeout pitcher when you get those situations. So, you know, do you get a ball in play? Maybe. Do you get a strikeout? Probably. You get a home run? Probably not. And those situations with runners in scoring position oftentimes dictate the game. So it is a very narrow margin for error when it comes to the playoffs. And that's why I take small pregame positions. I will rarely take a 3% pregame position. It will be a 1% pregame position. Then look to live bet accordingly as I pick up on things as the game is going along. So hopefully that helps you out a little bit there with the Major League Baseball playoffs. Again, if you have any questions, hit me up on Twitter at Skating Tripods or Adam at bangthebook.com. Didn't mention futures for Oakland, New York, or Boston. We obviously have to see who wins that wildcard game here tonight. Boston would be a big favorite over Oakland. New York and Boston would be a much closer series. So that will kind of dictate what you do at that point. But if you've got low prices on Boston and New York, very hard to hedge in the division series no matter what. That's why you want to take some of those longer shot options. Hope they win the division. Hope they get there via the wild card. Brewers, for example. You know, so those are the things that you have at your disposal there. I think I had one question about our Rockies future. I would hedge that pretty quickly here. And also, because it's a big ticket, you can make a significant hedge. I think the Brewers do advance. And as I mentioned, I think games one and two are very, very difficult for the Rockies, given what's happened over the last 3 days. And also, one other thing about that Brewers-Rockies series, I don't know if you know this or not, Milwaukee's AAA team is in Colorado Springs. So internally, they have a lot of data and a lot of information on how to handle altitude, how to best utilize altitude. One of the things that I'm sure that they've found, pitchers lose velocity quickly in the altitude because they tire out. So for Milwaukee, I would expect in game three, and if we need a game four, they are very, very aggressive with pulling their starters, with not letting their relievers go too deep into the ball games. So that will be a betting angle we can consider for games three and four. But again, they have a lot of data there for baseball and altitude. So that could be a little bit of a hidden advantage for them when that series does shift to Coors Field. So again, at Skating Tripods on Twitter, Adam at bangthebook.com. I give you my thoughts on that Indians future. Again, hedge it right away or wait it out. See if the Indians win game one, split in Houston, then you get a much different on the Houston Astros in that one. But again, all part of your risk tolerance, what you're willing to embrace when it comes to the futures betting market. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, I'll be joined by Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com and also Tony George, professional handicapper over at Doc Sports. Lots of college football and NFL coming your way on Thursday. Then on Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment and Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.